Good evening, this is Mae Brussel. The title of this broadcast is World Watchers. It is program number 751,
April 28, 1986. There was a gentleman who passed away last week who didn't get very much attention in the news, and I'll be doing a lot more on him in the weeks to come. His name is Robert Mullen. He's from Utah, and he ran a public relations firm in Washington, D.C., Mullen Associates, that was the office of James McCord, E. Howard Hunt, G. Gordon Liddy, Frank Sturgis, Bernard Barker, Eugenio Martinez, and the Watergate defendants, who were doing their hanky-panky, which resulted in the resignation of the President of the United States. It also was the public relations firm that ran the Howard Hughes account when Hughes was no more visible to the public from 1966 on, and who was deceased, but they carried it as a corporation. And I've alleged for many years that the Hughes organization has been running this country as the company. It also had a lot of famous clients as public relations firm. One was a Free Cuban Committee down in New Orleans, and the other was Riley Coffee Company. And that is the company that paid the paychecks for Lee Harvey Oswald when he worked for the Central Intelligence Agency in New Orleans. That's how important the Robert Mullen office was and is to American history, and he passed away with just 2 inches, and not even the Washington Post. I haven't seen every issue of the Washington Post since last week, but most of the major newspapers that I did see this last week had what I call the one-inch column. There's going to be a meeting of the Board of Supervisors tomorrow on advanced genetic sciences out in Salinas. They're going to extend the ban on bacteria. I'm going to continue most of the broadcast this hour on Libya and the implications of what is going on in the Middle East, but I will update you on the advanced genetic sciences and what is happening. The government had found them lying about already testing, putting out to the public live bacteria when they had not had permission to do so, and they were caught with other problems that have compounded their deviousness in Washington, D.C., and there is a ban on their using their live genetic bacteria, at least for the time being, and I have a lot to update for you on that, and I'll do that. I also just want to take note, but continue later, on the Duke and Duchess of Windsor. The Duchess was taken to England and buried just this week. The Duke and Duchess were two of the most important people to affect world history and the headlines of today. Again, what we see happening today had its roots in the 30s and 40s, They were very pro-Hitler. They were sent to the Bahamas and when he left England. And there they could meet with Rudolf Hess and Martin Bormann and set up the network in South America, in Madrid, and in Swiss banks for the Fourth Reich, which is slowly emerging out of the serpent's egg. I refer to that as the title of a movie Ingmar Bergman made on the nurturing of an egg, a serpent, a cobra in gestation. And you can see the sac in which it is growing for a long time, and then suddenly the cobra comes out. And cobra in this case, and in the case of that particular movie, was fascism. Rudolf Hess will die, I imagine, very soon, following the Duchess of Windsor. The London Times had an article June 29, 1984, that this sole prisoner from World War II, Rudolf Hess, Hitler's former deputy, who worked with Martin Bormann, has long been in Spandau Prison. He's been there. He's 92 years old now. And within four days of when he dies, the prison will be bulldozed. They will destroy the prison as soon as the four doctors examine the prisoner, confirm that he is dead. Not confirm that he is Rudolf Hess, but that the man in that particular cell is dead. Then he will be cremated immediately. His ashes will be scattered to leave no grave, and the prison will be torn down. The reason for tearing the prison is that there will not be a fingerprint or a trace to the original Rudolf Hess, who was a prisoner at the Nuremberg trials, and they will rip the building down, and there will not be a sign to prove it was him and not a body. And I believe that his trip and flight to Scotland on property that was very important politically was a means of him to escape Germany, and that after the war, this particular double, who was in the Tavistock Clinic and brainwashed and told he was Hess, took his place in the cell. So the Duchess of Windsor is dead, and within maybe two or three weeks or a month, I'll bet you that Rudolf Hess expires. But as soon as he does, or just before, I'll update you. for you the details of these very, very interesting people. When I started studying history, I lost any patience, which I had very little of in the first place, for fiction. Nobody could make up the stories of Howard Hughes, Rudolf Hess, the Duke and Duchess of Windsor, or Martin Bormann, and I will put them into some kind of a recognizable patchwork piece that explains their significance in the past and portends what they were going to do to the future and how it did really happen. The San Francisco Chronicle had a story today regarding the summit meeting of the heads of seven nations in Japan, and George Shultz yesterday on the television was saying, secret action by United States on terrorism hinted. The news is so outrageous, I don't even know where to begin to share it with you, and I'm sure you're having the same problem. He said covert action is something we need to be using. Well, just last week, the newspaper had an article that the intelligence system, the American intelligence, the CIA, and the defense intelligence agencies spent $42 billion, not million, $42 billion a year for intelligence information and covert action, of which 24 of it is totally secret, and they don't have to tell where the money goes. How George Shultz can say we have to have secret covert action when we spend $48 billion is just ludicrous. He also said, and it was announced on the various media channels and in the papers, that it would cost $40 million for security for the seven heads of state. And he said that's the price to pay when you have to be secure. Well, you would think that the seven heads of state would get together, and the first thing they might ask each other is, what have we done wrong? Well, the government has requested, our government has requested from Congress, $4 billion to make the embassy safe. And if we're that unpopular and we're that unwanted, isn't it about time that they looked to themselves and said, something is wrong here? So there's $40 million to protect seven men for 3 days, and $42 billion for covert action, and George Shultz is acting like a person who's never heard of spies or spy systems. The San Francisco Chronicle and the Monterey Herald carried syndicated stories this past week on how last November the CIA planned a covert action to destabilize Libya, that they were going to overthrow Libya, and they hoped that it would lead to people in Libya acting against Gaddafi and coming down on Gaddafi and removing him from office. Now, that's exactly the plan they had for the Bay of Pigs, and it didn't work, and the army was told that as soon as you get over there, everyone will be against Fidel Castro, and that was wrong. And again, the CIA, for their $42 billion, seemed to miss the point that the people were not destabilized in the Libyan government, and that the intent to lead the uprisings against Gaddafi, at least as yet, hasn't happened. Now, as May 4th rolls around this next week, you will see Mr. Kurt Waldheim. He will be president of Austria. He's meeting with the people who've accused him of being a Nazi war criminal, a Mr. Singer, who has made the strongest charges against him. And there's no doubt in my mind that he will be elected president of Austria. But the question comes to, if there were I want to ask this question, rather, share it with you. If there's 24,000 Nazi war criminals listed in the files and archives of the United Nations alone, and the only people they've released are the papers on Adolf Eichmann and Martin Bormann and Joseph Mengele and now Waldheim, and Waldheim wouldn't let them out when he was head of the UN, what happened to the 23,996 other Nazis whose records are kept? If an issue is forced that you have to get a name out of these 24,000, and one of them is Waldheim, who's been head of the UN for so many years, who are the other people and what positions of power do they have? And the Washington Post had an article July 5th, this last 1985, wanted up to 50,000 war criminals believed to be at large worldwide. Is that 50,000 plus 24,000, or is it 24,000 less from 50,000? That is a lot. That's not a lot of Nazis. That's war criminals charged with murders, mass murders, torture, and so forth. 50,000 at large. And the question isn't, was Waldheim deporting Jews to their death? But what happened in the process when the war was over that these people were not removed from positions, if, say, controlling the media, buying the media, buying studios, buying radio stations, the industrialists making arms, making weapons. If one of those people was supposed to be hung at Nuremberg, like Walter Dornberger, was flown to the United States to run Bell Aerospace, that was so important for the Shah of Iran, for the military dictatorships around the country, for the Vietnam War, for Laos and Cambodia and so forth. If one of them, who was supposed to be hung, was allowed to run Bell Aerospace, can you imagine where those 49,991 are, or the other 24, as I said, you add 24 to the 50,000 or subtract it? The whole point is that the Simon Wiesenthal Center, the Anti-Defamation League, the Gentile community, the Jewish community, the Mossad in Israel have had no interest in finding these people at all, and they arrested their laurels. They said, we brought in Adolf Eichmann. That was the bottom line, and now they're bringing in about 8 or 10 of these poor ancient people in wheelchairs and otherwise, and deporting them, like Mr. Rudolph, who worked with NASA all these years with the moon and the space rockets and shuttle systems. And the handful of people who've outlived their lives anyway, the elderly, the token Nazis, are being deported. But their children, and they're like Kurt Waldheim's son, who said, I forged the papers on my father, I backdated them, and he lied. He is an official or a lawyer in the country, this country. Otto von Bolschwing's son is a lawyer. They've gone on and raised children who are in leadership positions in the United States who are sympathetic to the past and to their parents. And if America has changed tremendously since World War II, this is part of the problem. Now, many of you might have seen the articles, the quotations from the London papers this morning about Gaddafi. He said this as of April 28th, Gaddafi declares the U.S. raids could lead to world war. And I said on World Watchers last week that this has to be the beginning of World War III. The first guns that went off were Grenada. That was identical to Hitler's Blitzkrieg. When Hitler went into Austria, or Mussolini went into Ethiopia, the world did nothing. There was absolute silence. The people who shot Maurice Bishop haven't been tried. Bishop tried to work with the United States, just like Gaddafi's tried to work with the United States. And Gaddafi knows now what is happening, and this is World War III. He said the April 15th raids were an indirect attack on the Soviet Union, and they may try to put Libya into a communist bloc, such as Maurice Bishop was pushed. But this was not an attack on Libya. This was, in fact, an attack on the Soviet Union. And I'll cite a few of the articles that I just read there. I had about 40 last week, and in the last 3 weeks, they were running simultaneously next to the articles on Libya and Gaddafi being a terrorist. And among them, George Shultz attacking the Soviet Union as being behind all of the terrorism, so that the mindset is getting ready after you take Gaddafi and you take Libya and have a military coup in Egypt and get rid of Mubarak, then you go for the Big Bang, and the Big Bang is the Soviet Union. Today's articles in the newspaper were side by side of another one, teetotaling Soviet officials acting drunk with power. Not George Shultz drunk with power, not Caspar Weinberger, not Ronald Reagan, but the Soviets drunk with power. The Soviets are being put in a corner and are somewhat frantic and will go to the summit no matter what. But the way the paper reads is that they want power, and it's put psychologically right next to the articles about Libya. Now, Gaddafi said that President Reagan is an aged, cancer-ridden fanatic who wants the world to end on his death. He's suffering from old age and from cancer. He would finish the world at the end of his life. And why does he care if the world stays? That's what Gaddafi said. He said the raids on Libya were ordered because the United States is worried that the Soviet Union is trying to build a military force in the Mediterranean. And what America has always wanted and built up Gaddafi for was to then knock him down as a terrorist and have that whole base in the Mediterranean and then along Egypt and to begin circle the Mediterranean for that World War III attack against the Soviet Union. And he's absolutely right that this is what the intent is. He said the attack on Libya was the start of the United States' attempt to upset the strategic balance that has existed since World War II. In the final analysis, it is all directed against the Soviet Union, and that is true. Alan Dulles and our intense anti-communism trained Reinhard Gehlen, Hitler's chief of intelligence, who gave Gaddafi his learning, along, as I mentioned last week, along with Sadat and Nasser training them by Otto Skorzeny and top Nazis, believing that they were part of the IN team, and then later they could cut them down, call them terrorists, and wipe them out and take the country and the resources that our corporations have built up there, which they're still pumping and using while Gaddafi is being singled out. As I say, he says that Ronald Reagan is cancerous and half-dead, and he doesn't care about the world, and I think that Gaddafi's analysis is absolutely right. And the same day, this morning in the newspaper, Nicaraguan diplomat says U.S. plans attack. America is sending missiles to Angola, missiles to Afghanistan, will attack Central America and Gaddafi and begin to use the muscles of the multi-billions and billions of weapons that we have been putting together for the days to come. The Washington Post had a cartoon last week of a newscaster who looks exactly like Ted Koppel. It's almost a direct drawing that Herblock did. And above him, sitting behind the news desk, is a globe of the world. And then the news items, Washington, Nicaragua, Honduras, and Libya. And then the caption on the cartoon, the newscaster above it says, "So much for the international news. The facts will be along later." And that's exactly what is happening in the world. The facts come later after you read the small print in the newspapers around the world. The London Times had an article just this last week. It was April 20th, "The Mystery of 15 Secret Planes." And it said the American raid on Libya was much bigger and struck more targets than Mrs. Thatcher had agreed upon. Originally, she was told by the Pentagon that only 29 planes would attack, and now there were more than 44 that attacked, that the targets were to be limited to specific areas, that we went beyond the targets in those areas and lied about who we were going to hit and how we did it. And Great Britain is embarrassed and said they cannot support any more attacks. The method and area they hit and the way we did it and lied to them after getting permission to target the area is important, because that's an example of the kind of lies this cartoon is suggesting. Also, the lie of the Sandinistas invading Honduras came to be a full circle of disclosures in the past 10 days, that the Hondurans were forced to say this, that there was pressure on them to say it. And right after they said that they had been invaded by the Sandinistas, Ronald Reagan got the emergency money for the Contras from the Senate and $19 million, a payoff for Honduras for saying such facts. And now you read the newspapers, and it was all a lot to do about nothing, and the Nicaraguans are hardly inside of Honduras. The San Francisco Examiner had an article April the 3rd with big black letters across the top of the page, "Once glorious Mediterranean, now a snake pit of death and hate." If you wonder why for 15 years I've spoken on the air about the Nazi connections, Reinhard Gehlen, the CIA, with Alan Dulles and James Angleton and William Donovan, and the use of the Permandex operation with even the NASA Nazis, Wernher von Braun and Walter Dornberger, and then going into the background of Henry Kissinger and Alexander Haig and Fritz Kramer. The reason I go into these people, and Charles Willoughby, Mr. Wiedenbach from the Kriegs Academy, Hitler's Academy, the reason I go into these names and people is that they are changing the world continuously and making it every day a worse place, a less safe place, a more armed place, a crazy place, a polluted place, more unemployment, more slavery, more pain, more sorrow, in order to achieve this psychosis that they have about this war against Russia, which is their biblical Armageddon. They are destroying all these places around the world. And the San Francisco Examiner cites the Mediterranean as an idyllic haven for movie stars or poets or princes or people who like the beaches. Now it is the playground of terrorists. It's one of the most dangerous places to travel. They cited that last June, 80 people were killed in planes, ships, and airports in the country. In addition, another 60 were killed. Palestinians and Tunisians were killed by the Mossad when an Israeli plane struck the area in vengeance for the blow-up of a yacht that had three Israeli Mossad spies on it. And that was merely 140 deaths. 80 people was in 60, 140 deaths. But that's just minute, the Lebanon bombings and the various death squads that are taking place in Egypt now, the killing of people there that I'll be going into more this week or next week. And they sighted the TW Flight 847 on the way from Athens to Rome, the latest of the series of attacks in June. The area is totally unsafe, and the Mr. Leon Klinghoffer murder, October the 7th, is cited. The ships, the airplanes, the passageways, the countries throughout the entire Middle East, and this will spread, and it is all over Europe, in France, in Germany, Italy, and the terrorism to destabilize Europe was put together by Otto Skorzeny, Hitler's most dangerous man, and he was the one who rescued Mussolini and worked for Adolf Hitler, and he set up the team that did the Bologna bombing and other bombings in Italy, Germany, the Oktoberfest, and so forth, to spread fear that would bring fascism. The purpose of all of this terrorism is to bring a police state where people ask for order and get the police state. The LA Herald had an article April 21st. The Pentagon's bill for a 12-minute attack was $50 million. The 12-minute raid on Libya cost $50 million. So 12 minutes was $50 million, $4 billion to protect the embassies because of all the violence happening, $40 billion to protect the CIA, the intelligence systems, $40 million to protect seven heads of state for 3 days. Add up the craziness of this. Now, that raid on Libya, the Air Force F-111s, they lost one. That cost $30.7 million. There were 50 missiles that fell down that were fired by the Navy carriers that cost $200,000 each. That was $10 million for 50 missiles that were dropped. A man in Chicago by the name of Ben Kamen died a couple of days ago, and he left $200,000 to the United States government to bail out us out of a debt of $2 trillion. He felt sorry for the United States and left $200,000 to the United States. Well, Mr. Ben Kamen, wherever he is in heaven or hell, can appreciate that his $200,000 bought one missile, which dropped on the French embassy, maybe, or killed Gaddafi's adopted daughter or wounded his sons. And it went into the residential section of Libya that it wasn't supposed to do. And again, the London Times said that one missile launched in the center of a park in a children's playground. The house next to the French embassy was completely demolished. A child's foot stuck out of the rubble. The body of an old man was in a crouch as if he was getting out of bed. 11 women and two men, and six men, three women rather, and two children were killed by one of those missiles that cost $500,000. So he wanted to help us out. We sure spent the money fast. 24 F-14 Tomcats that gave air cover to two aircraft carriers cost $2.7 million that night, and 27 Air Force tankers to refuel the F-111s cost $1 million. So that was, in all, a bill for 12 minutes, $50 million. Now, as soon as we attacked the cities in Libya, the ABC, CBS, NBC, and CNN interview people on the streets. Do you think it was right to bomb Gaddafi? Oh, yeah, he's very mean. He's a terrorist. We have to do something. And they ask the next person who hasn't read a paper since they were born, what do you think about bombing Gaddafi? Yeah, we got to be strong. He gives us a lot of trouble. Well, if you ask those people if they wanted a health center in their town or money into Medicare where they wouldn't be kicked out of the hospital after 3 days for major surgery, or if they would want even provisions for children care centers when parents work and unwed mothers or divorced parents to put these children into places where they are supervised, $50 million, then if they knew the cost before they answered the question and they knew how many died and those people didn't do the damage and they knew what it would cost now to protect people, which will run into the billions because of the $50 million spent in 12 minutes, maybe they would give a decent answer. But these polls aren't asked on a basis of information. They're asked on a basis of a gut level, which is ridiculous. Now, in the paper just this last week, there was an article, the CIA is accused of planning future terrorist plots. The United States and Israel and the Mossad are going to do terrorist actions in Europe that will be blamed on Gaddafi. The information came not from Liberty Lobby, not from Lyndon LaRouche, but friendly states in European countries that are afraid of the escalation of terrorism. And they said within the very near future, the Mossad and the CIA will have people causing terrorism that they will blame on Gaddafi. And the purpose is that the European public opinion was not sympathetic to what Ronald Reagan did, and that if they can create barbaric acts, it would excuse American aggression, and then America would have their base in the Mediterranean, and we'd have our 52nd or 53rd state. Israel certainly is a state, and the Philippines seems to be a state, the way we select the presidents and approve of the shenanigans going on there. And Libya will be in state of the United States for all practical purposes. The Washington Times had an article about the controversy of spending $4.4 billion to upgrade the embassies. This was March 26th, and they said that it won't cause security, that the more that we are fighting in Libya and in Syria and Lebanon, we will be unsafe and that you can't make the embassies safe. The construction program, the article said, already on the State Department drawing boards is among several recommendations made in June by a panel appointed by George Shultz, headed by retired Admiral Bobby Ray Inman, a former CIA deputy. Inman was head of the National Security Council, and he set up a plan of $4 billion. He's now at the University of Texas with a combination of the seven most powerful computers in the world to keep track of everyone in the world through those computers. And if we put in the money, he'll get contracts for his computer company out of the $4.4 billion, because he will be in the job of protecting us against terrorists. And these people make huge amount of money, and you can't separate their facts and patriotism from their tremendous profits. Now, when we attacked Libya, there were lots of reasons, and again, none of them were accurate because, as I cited last week, in 1981, the CIA had drawn up plans to kill Gaddafi. To take over Libya as a country, it had nothing at all to do with the Berlin bombing, and that easily could be set up by an agent provocateur using telephone lines and calling and saying, we accomplished what we were going to do. As I said before, I don't think that you announce in these wires and telephone lines about your acts of terrorism that go directly to Libya and Gaddafi. The Los Angeles Times, the New York Times had an article, Why the United States Decided to Confront Libya. The White House feared attacks on diplomats. They didn't fear attacks on diplomats. The diplomats weren't safe because Gaddafi has known since 1981 that William Casey planned to kill him. George Shultz, as I mentioned last week, was more open. He said one goal was to overthrow Gaddafi. That wasn't one of the goals. That was, well, I guess it was one goal. The other is to take care of the oil and the resources of Libya and put them in the hands of American corporations. Casper Weinberger had a long editorial in the LA Times. Our one and only objective was freedom of navigation. Well, that was a very expensive freedom of navigation, and the Gulf of Sidra is so small and so insignificant for our atomic submarines. And here is the Secretary of Defense telling an outright lie when they had long planned early in July, August, and September to get rid of Muammar Gaddafi. They also said that they wanted the Europeans, allies, to isolate Gaddafi as we were doing, and that they pointed the way by their actions that they should follow us now and dump Gaddafi, that this was to encourage them. Then George Shultz was described in the LA Times as the number one hawk, and it was an article about him, the Libya raid, a triumph for Shultz policy, the administration's leading hawk. Now, 4 months ago, the Heritage Foundation wanted the State Department to get rid of George Shultz. They thought he was a wimp and liberal, and there were many attacks on George Shultz. You can remember that. It wasn't long ago. And the Heritage Foundation, the group behind Ronald Reagan's policies and administration, with Mr. Coor from Coor Beer and the Mellon family, Richard Mellon, Scaife, and so forth, write the programs for Ronald Reagan, and they wanted members of the Heritage Foundation working with the State Department and the State Department consulting the Heritage Foundation. Now, it's true that Ronald Reagan is elected as president of the United States, but the policies that we have and that he does come from people like the Heritage Foundation. So all they had to do is call George Shultz a softy and say, we want his job. He's being soft on the powers that be. And all of a sudden, within 4 months, he is able to bomb Libya and start the war against Gaddafi for specific corporations. And all of a sudden, he's the leading hawk. He could have left the State Department as Cyrus Vance did under the Carter administration, But he's staying there, and he is their boy 100%. The Wall Street Journal had an article on the risks invading or bombing Libya, and they said there will be long-term gain and that there may be a division in our alliances with our allies, but that our future is enhanced and the American can go forward having made the decision to try to wipe out Gaddafi and, of course, take Libya as a sound investment and military base. I'll take a 1 minute now for those of you who tape record this broadcast. Many of you put it on tape cassettes. I hope you do. And so the 30-minute cassette you can turn over while I'm sharing time with you. And if you want a bibliography of the information that I have on the air and the source of the articles, write to me, May, M-A-E, Brussel, P.O. Box 22511, Carmel, 93922.